Welcome to Coffee with the College, a podcast brought to you by the American College of Healthcare Executives, Wisconsin chapter. Our goal is that listeners find this podcast as relaxing as coffee with friends and just as comfortable as you hear our guests and observers banter about questions that are on all of our minds. If you've listened to our podcast before, you're familiar with our format. I'm your host, Janet Schultz. I'm Chief Information Officer at a human services company called MyPath. Our observers are Brian Mahulski, Health System Specialist at Zablock EVA Medical Center in Milwaukee, and Abraham Dulhoff, Manager of Virtual Care and Patient Access to Care at Mercy Health. In today's podcast, we begin an exploration on the topic of artificial intelligence and what its intersects and impacts could be on healthcare. Our guest is Ron Galloway, a technology researcher and author of three books describing the influence of technology in our lives. Welcome, Ron. So, Ron, to prepare for our time with you today, Abraham, Brian, and I all watched a presentation you did in December 2019 at Health Spaces. In that presentation, you really challenged the audience to think of how technology will impact healthcare in ways that were maybe new for many of the audience members to think about. You also noted what companies may impact healthcare delivery in ways we're not used to seeing. To get things started today, though, could you share the AlphaGo story?
Oh, yeah, AlphaGo is kind of interesting. It's a film on Netflix. And what happened was Google has something called DeepMind, which they've now folded into Google Health. But DeepMind was an AI that learned iteratively. It learned from itself. So what it would do, the Japanese game of Go, not Japanese, the Eastern game of Go has been around for, you know, 1,000 years, and it's much more complicated than chess. And about 20 years ago, the computer beat chess, you know, somebody at chess beat Kaspersky at chess. But everybody thought there's no way anybody would be able to defeat the game of Go because the board is like 70 by 70 grid, something like that. And there are just too many permutations. Nobody thought that would ever be possible. But what happened is they just kept feeding. They had the AI play the world's best Go players. Then they had the AI play itself over and over and over again until they thought it had generated every move it could possibly make. And it did defeat the world's leading Go player named Lee Sedol. But then in the third game, Lee Sedol decided to throw something out there that the computer had never seen before. And the computer sort of broke down, much as HAL did in 2001, A Space Odyssey, when HAL had his little crisis. Mm-hmm. The computer had its little crisis, and Lee Sedol won that match. But the fact of the matter is the computer won, I believe, 4 out of the 5 matches of something no one ever thought it would be able to do. And it did it because they kept pouring data into it. And we're at a place now where not only do we have the data to put into it, but our computers can actually, they're capable of assessing this data, of taking it all in. And it all really started in healthcare, where this all goes back to and fits into AI, is back in 2009 with the High Tech Act. Y'all remember the High Tech Act? The High Tech Act basically instituted meaningful use. And it required that everybody start using electronic healthcare records. Heretofore, that had not been the case. Some hospitals had had it, but I bet out of the 4,500 hospitals in the United States, maybe 1,000 at that time in 2009 had formal EHRs. But the High Tech Act made them all get it. And so basically what happened is you had two things going on. You had computers getting more and more powerful, and you had more and more data available to be fed in and analyzed by an AI. And so the combination of those two things, more computing power and more data, made this data, which we'd never had before, much more valuable. And that's what's attracted the interest of lots and lots of companies is because data is simply so valuable now. If you take a look at Facebook, Facebook is worth roughly $1 trillion. Why is Facebook worth $1 trillion? Because it's not because of subscription fees. We don't pay to be on there. It's because of the data. What's interesting is that data doesn't have to be factual data. You know, I can tell them my name is Mickey Mouse and put a picture of, you know, Ava Gardner up there, and they wouldn't be able to pigeonhole me at all. And I could tell them I live in Spain and they wouldn't be able to pigeonhole me. But health data direct from an electronic healthcare record is valid. It's true. So you know you're getting good data, and it's a lot of data. There was a study done. It was funded by Google at two academic hospitals up north, up around Chicago. And each patient, well, I'll go and give you the number. They examined the EHRs of 200,000 patients. And the amount of records they came up with was 64 billion, which amounts to about 230,000 pieces of data per patient. So it's just mounds and mounds of data. And companies such as, you know, Google and Facebook and a couple of other companies we'll talk about, data is their money. Data is their oil. You know, they're like oil companies, and data is their oil. And now there's a new gusher of data that's available, hadn't been able to be examined before, and now it is. And I'll give you an example from that Google study on how valuable the data can be. In that Google study, well, it was researchers funded by Google. They took those 64 billion records, and at the end of it, they could tell when someone came into the emergency department. All right, they could tell with a 95-degree confidence interval whether or not that person was going to die in 24 hours based upon what was there in their electronic healthcare record. They could tell with an 85% confidence interval whether or not somebody was going to need readmission in 30 days. All right, and those are valuable things to learn. So all of a sudden, we have all these, we've got all this data and all these people thinking up all these amazing ways to use this data. And we have big tech companies who really before weren't interested in healthcare elbowing each other to get in now, because that's where the data is. Healthcare institutions, the 4,500 hospitals that we have now, are now data institutions. As much as like the travel industry is become a data business and banking is a data business, healthcare is now a data business. And that's what's attracted the attention of the big three or four, depending on how you look at it, but Amazon, Google, Apple, and I'm going to throw Walmart in there too, because Walmart, I've always said, is a data company, and they're heavily getting in there.
So Ron, that it brings up a really good point. One of the other topics that you presented in that presentation, in healthcare, and I'm sure this happens everywhere, but that's just the space I'm in. We talk about, you know, big data, and we talk about garbage in, garbage out, right? So if we have all the data in the world, at least this is the way that we typically think about it, we have all the data in the world, it's not necessarily always good data. But what you're potentially saying is that all data can be good data if you're looking at it the right way. And a good example that you shared, and maybe you can go over this now, is Walmart. When I think you were talking about Florida and how they stock for a hurricane.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, Walmart basically, they watch everything, and they watch their computers. I did a film on Walmart a long time ago. And it was basically, well, it was supposed to be about the logistics of Walmart, but it wound up being about something else. But I got to go into their data centers. And Walmart collects all kinds of data. And you have to remember, 140 million people go into a Walmart each week. All right. And they're all buying, let's say, 20 things. So Walmart knows that the people are in there, where they're located, what they're buying, what the weather is like when they're buying certain things. You know, if it's a certain time of year around Halloween, they'll have certain things stocked. And Walmart knows, depending without any human intervention, Walmart, if they see a hurricane heading towards Miami, Florida, they will go ahead and stock that store without anybody saying anything. Orders will be generated automatically for actually the two things that people seem to want in a hurricane that they know through data mining, which are beer and strawberry Pop-Tarts. That's how narrowed down they've got it. And that's where we can go with healthcare too. You can take somebody's electronic healthcare record and you can use photographs of retinal fundus that you normally get when you go see your ophthalmologist. Those are pretty standard photographs, right? Well, somebody got the bright idea to cross-correlate those with electronic healthcare records. And they found that by using those two different types of data, I mean, they weren't from the same data set. By using disparate data, they're able to predict a heart attack in somebody with a three-year time frame. So they can look at your retinal fundus and go, yeah, you're going to have a heart event sometime in the next 3 years. And then if you really want to throw a spanner into the works, you have to think about genomics. You know, because we're heading towards a place where absolutely for sure your genomic data is going to be part of your electronic healthcare record. And your genomic data is, I believe, about 4 gigabytes worth of data, which is a little depressing if you think about it, because that means all the data that makes you you, it takes up less space, and it's all zeros and ones. It takes up, in a fashion, it's zeros and ones, but it takes up less space than a full install of Microsoft Office. So everything that makes you you, but in terms of pure data itself, 4 gigabytes is not that much data to add to the set, to someone's data set. So you're going to have an electronic healthcare record combined with a genomic record, combined with the data that's generated by the wearables that people are going to be having on them, supplied by Apple, Google, and Amazon so far, right? So there's three different data sources. My doctor, the other day, my heart rate sort of for a little while popped down to 42 beats a minute. So I was kind of in Marsha Bradycardia. And you know, I called my doctor and he had me send my week's data from my Apple Health app, right? And the Apple Watch, by the way, will tell you if you're in bradycardia for longer than 10 minutes or if you're tachycardic for longer than 10 minutes. I mean, it knows. So we've got data that's going to be generated 24 hours a day coming from the device on your wrist. You've got your electronic healthcare record data coming from your healthcare institution and all your doctors, and then your genomic data all mixed in. And we're in a world now where we've got enough computing power to actually be able to handle that data and make inferences. The key word here is inferences, and make inferences that we were never, ever, ever able to make before. But in the bigger picture of the thing, which would be money, the United States economy is about an $18 trillion economy, and healthcare is about $3 trillion of that. So these big companies like Google and Amazon and Apple, for instance, has a over $2 trillion market capitalization right now. Well, okay, and the iPhone's been around for, I'm going to say 11 years, maybe longer. But anyway, they can't go into a small business. Apple cannot go into a business that's going to make $1 billion, because that doesn't matter when their revenue is $300 or $400 billion. An extra $1 billion does not matter to them at all. They need to go into a big, big business, which is why they're looking at the car business and why they're looking at the healthcare business. So all these big tech companies that have already scaled up and have, you know, Google is at $1 trillion market cap, and Amazon's over that, and Apple's all that. they can't be going into small businesses. And the biggest business out there, the one they can target, is healthcare. And it just so happens that these are the same businesses that are totally adept at massaging data. So that's the reason they are interested into it, because now they know how to make money with data. And there's a good side to it in that you'll be able to do, you know, virtual clinical trials. We're in a place now where you can do virtual clinical trials based on data for diseases that only 500 people in the world have, right? And you can examine electronic healthcare records and genomic records and mix it all together and kind of design your own little clinical trial on something nobody would have ever studied before. On the bad side, this healthcare data is going to be monetized somehow. It just is. And so we don't really know what form that's going to take, you know, or who's going to do what with our data. Maybe there'll be, you know, stronger privacy laws enacted. I don't know what's going to happen, but that's sort of the downside, is people could use this for ill, but it's also an incredible opportunity to use it for good. As I said, I mean, giving you the ability to look at somebody's eye and tell them you're going to have a heart attack in 3 years.
Let's pause for a moment to thank our sponsors who make this podcast possible, and for that, we truly appreciate them. Our premier sponsors are Epstein Ewan Architects, HGA, and Hush Blackwell. Our preferred sponsors are Hall Render, Findorf, Nutanix, and Quarles & Brady.
So maybe, Ron, maybe we can go back maybe just a step and talk about, now that we have all this data and we have computing power to be able to analyze and predict data, my healthcare mind is, oh, this is fantastic. We're going to be able to predict illness. We're going to be able to predict you know, breakouts. We're going to be able to do that kind of thing. Am I being too narrow-minded when I think about the benefits to the healthcare industry?
No, I don't think so.
Is there something else that we might not be thinking about?
No, because the benefits scale. I'll give you an example. In Minnesota, y'all remember how, well, in Minnesota, and this was 10 years ago, but you know, Google, essentially, when you make a Google search, it records your IP and then it records what you're looking for. So that's two fields of data. Well, for a while there, before Google had Google Autocomplete, they were able to take just those two pieces of data. And let's say we're in Minnesota, and all of a sudden, a lot of people in Minnesota are Googling the term flu symptoms. So if they can look at the IPs, tell where they are, and a lot of people from this geographic region are Googling flu symptoms, and they were able to get a scary degree of predictive accuracy just off those two fields of data, but that were crowdsourced in a sense. So if you've got crowdsourcing across, you know, essentially hundreds or thousands of fields of data, it's really, yeah, I think the benefits far outweigh the bad parts. I'll give you an example of a bad part. Amazon has a wearable. I can't remember the name of it right now. It'll come to me. But Amazon has a wearable which does what the Apple Watch does. It records your heart rate. It records how many steps you walk in a day, that sort of thing. But it also listens to your voice, and it defines your mood. It gives you a scoring on your mood. And in fact, so it'll tell you, like, if you're being nice to your dog, but you're not being nice to your wife, it will sense that you're not being nice to your wife and let you know that. Now, if you're talking about employer-based healthcare, being able to judge your employee's mood by their voice, by their vocal tone, if that's in the hands of an employer, because perhaps they're the ones paying for your healthcare, then that can take you, I think, into a weird place. But I just think the almost random nature of the things we're going to find out from all this data. I mean, who would have ever thought about learning that people in a hurricane like strawberry Pop-Tarts, right? So it's going to be something like that. You know, we're going to be, we'll find out that, you know, then I'm just using this as an example, you know, people will run a lot of different things together and maybe find out that, you know, Lucky Charm cereal helps glaucoma. Well, who would have ever looked for that in the first place, right? But it can pop up in the data. And speaking of stuff popping up in the data, just on the heart rates, speaking of the VISTA system was where we learned that there was a problem with the heart drug Vioxx because people noticed a little blip on a few data sets in the VISTA system at the VA, right? So if you can notice profound things from simple data, you'll be able to notice really, really profound things from complex data that we're finally able to make inferences from. And what's also interesting is it may wind up helping us define what actually is good health. What is, I mean, we think, well, for the longest time, we thought 120 over 80 was what you want your blood pressure to be, right? Well, now they've redefined that. And I think they redefined it a little bit higher as to what good health is. Well, it may be that this leads us, all this data and looking at people who are in general healthy versus those that are, you know, not healthy may lead us to a different, you know, a different definition of what healthy. Maybe a healthy BMI is not 25. Maybe a healthy BMI is 28. But it's just, it's these things that we can't predict that I find so fascinating. I'll give you another example. When you're wearing your Apple Watch, Apple invented a plugin now, which does gait analysis. So it will measure your gait and, you know, the distance between your steps, how accurate that distance is, how long you're on one foot. Are you on both feet when you're walking, or you go one foot, other foot? And if you're walking normally, well, that's great. But if over time you start walking a little bit more unbalanced, it may be an indicator of something that you need to look at, right? Never, ever were we able to do that before. I mean, you might be shuffling in your gait a little more than you were, and that might be an indication of certain types of maladies. It's these things that we don't know, these random things that we're not even looking for that we're going to pop up. You know, because who would have thought about that 20 years ago? You know, studying somebody's gait to see if it's an indicator of onset of Alzheimer's, right? But that's actually happening right now. So yeah. It's these things that we can't, I mean, we can sort of predict results, say, man, it's going to be great. We're going to cure cancer. And that's fine. But it's these things that we can't even predict that we're going to cure or be able to help that wind up being the really fascinating part. I think AI is going to be one of those, at least in the healthcare field, it's going to be one of those things where actually the benefits far exceed the promises.
So that brings me to one of the points you made during that presentation we referenced, and that is, how do we view this technology? Do we view it as competition, or do we view it as augmentation? And so
I think augmentation, absolutely, because it just allows you, because somebody may have something that, you know, a doctor just might not have thought of before, but it may be, if you run data through a computer, it may pop up and say, you might want to look for this condition. You know, especially if it's an obscure type condition. So I think that a lot of work is being done sub rosa right now, but there are some people doing some awfully interesting things in medicine right now. And there's a reason why all these companies want to get in. And when things get really crazy is when you start mixing all these different data fields. You know, all the data that Amazon has on you, or all, you know, in theory with Google, they could take your search engine history and mix it with health data and see what that means. you know, what that comes up with. Let's say you did a lot of searches for, you know, if you're like me and you do a lot of searches for recipes for banana pudding, which is not necessarily all that good for you, but it's awesome. You know, they probably know, well, Ron's probably got a little more weight on him than he would like to have. And, you know, and then you get into the part where whether or not that's able to be used to determine what your health insurance premium is going to be and how that information will then flow to life insurance companies, if it will, mm-hmm. or if it won't.
Yeah.
But HIPAA, and when you're talking about HIPAA and the sharing of this information, I mean, it's a dam where I think water is already going over the dam.
With these AI insights in mind, we're going to close this edition of Coffee with the College and pick up on this topic in a second podcast. We've already heard how, by integrating all the data available in healthcare, we can gain insights to make health and healthcare better. We hope you'll join us for our continuing conversation with Ron Galloway to learn more about why we need to embrace, not run from, AI, and to hear some concrete examples of what it will mean for healthcare delivery in the future. Thanks for listening.